accession number 31693, reel 11.
Mr. Robson, reel 11.
Tell me the story of the train incident.
When George reported to the Sergeant Major that we had an extra passenger, it must have happened to him before, because he was quite blasé about it. However, the Major who was in charge of the train started to panic a little bit. So the Sergeant Major says, "Don't worry about it. No problem. We're sorted out." So anyway, he came along with it, and I took him, and I showed him this poor little West German guy. And of course, this Sergeant Major could also speak German. This young lad, I would say he was about 22, 23. He'd worked in, from what the message that we got from him, and what the Sergeant Major was saying was, he worked in the German steelworks in Potsdam. He had a lot of scars on his hands from burns, and just wanted to get out of East Germany. And of course, we had some Royal Signals on board as well. They used to have a link between the Berlin garrison, Berlin Brigade headquarters, and in West Germany. And of course, it was a secure link. And what we had to do was inform Berlin Brigade headquarters that we had an extra passenger, an East German who'd got on the train. So again, caused a little bit of a minor panic in Brigade headquarters. And we used to get on board the train some beautiful meals, absolutely superb meals, not by Army Catering Corps, but by the German train company. Although it was a military train, it was civilian staffed, and the chefs were absolutely superb. Always remember the meals that we used to get there, absolutely superb. So we fed this guy, and then the instructions we were given everyone was got together, all told, right, you must keep quiet about this, do not talk about it, keep the blinds down until we get into Berlin. And when we get to Berlin, our job as the squaddies, we then had to go along, take all the chocks out so the passengers could get off. But I had to stay with this German as a guard. And the guys who were actually who pulled him into the train, all their names and units were taken to be interviewed at a later stage by the military police. When we got into Charlottenburg Station, Charlottenburg Station, there to greet us were the Royal Military Police and West German Police. But it had to be kept quiet as well, otherwise it could have created an incident. And the next thing I knew was this guy, a blanket was thrown over his head, and he was taken away by the military police and the civilian police. And that was the last I heard of the incident. So that was another duty we had to do. And again, after the wall was built, I mean, that was, tension was pretty high at that time.
Where were your actual positions for these duties, you know, when you went out and took your positions, do you remember where they were?
I can't remember. Each company had their own position.
Were you on the board of the British and Russian zones or something?
We were mainly in the British zone, because one of the things we had to protect as well, because it also affected the families. And the families were actually at that time, I mean, they were allowed to pack one suitcase only, because we didn't know when it was going to be a major evacuation of all British families. And as I say, we were there for about 3 days, but after that happened, at the Brandenburg Gate, this is where we used to have, at that time when it was when the incident was quite serious, we had a company on duty at Brandenburg Gate. I remember that, because the Russians used to insist on coming through the Brandenburg Gate, because there's a big memorial for the Russians. So they used to come over and do their parade, and they used to do it, I think it used to be every day. They used to come in and do it, because it was a Russian war memorial. So they were spread in various places. And see, it was a blur, really. See, I was the signals officer's radio operator, so he used to do. We used to go around the different companies and make sure all the radios were, and we do a resupply of batteries and everything else so I didn't see much of the activity of the companies on the ground. We used to have, because of everything that was going on, a place called the Ice Keller. And it's very, very strange. It was only a narrow track for one vehicle to go out of Berlin, or because this place was, to a farm, which was about, I would say, 2 or 3 kilometres through East Germany to this farm. How it became part of West Berlin, I don't know. Because it was only a small place, and although we never saw the families who were living there, we do believe that was farmers. We used to have a platoon who was permanently there, although it was changed around, you know, between battalions as well, so it wasn't just us. So that was another duty we had to do.
So this would be another chap I interviewed was talking about a patrol that went through the Russian area. This must be it then.
It was called the Ice Keller, and that was the name of the place. And it was a platoon who was in there, and we also, because we were signals, we had to have a signals set up back to, I can't remember whether it was back to the battalion or back to brigade headquarters. But we weren't permanently on standby all the time. It the signals. We had to open up and radio back every so often to keep in radio contact with. Let's say, I'm not quite sure whether it was battalion headquarters or brigade headquarters, because if it was a battalion headquarters, we'd have a permanent set up a battalion. So it must have been to brigade headquarters.
You never knew why that the position was there.
No, not the faintest idea. I've seen it on a map of Berlin, and it was just this narrow track to this area of land which wasn't part of East Germany. Strange. And when you used to drive down there, you used to see the Vorpos, the East German police, patrolling either side. They weren't allowed to come onto our little bit. And they used to give us a waiver as we used to go through. But they always had these vicious Alsatians with them. strange.
So could you take me through a typical day when you're in Bury, so from Rivalli and your particular work and duties?
Again, signals. We were always we would try and improve on our call outs, because obviously all the equipment had to be all the radio equipment had to be put into the vehicles, but we're always training at signals wise. We also had company training, and also we had our own range within the barracks, and we used to and the football pitch, I must admit, was absolutely superb. Main football pitch reserved only for the battalion football, the first team, and battalion second team. And there was one or two other pitches which were company, and we had our intercompany football matches. We had the two football teams going, first team and second team. I was part of the second team, and we had our own leagues within Berlin. And in the 2 years that we're there, the battalion never lost a football match, either first team or second team. We won both trophies. The battalion got through to the semi-finals of the Army Championships. But again, in those days, it was still National Servicemen. So they actually, and they used to be in full-time training. It was an actual football platoon. They were always in tracksuits, special meals and everything else. So that went on. But yes, we used to continue with our signals, improving our skills. And of course, our colour sergeant at the time was a man called colour sergeant Josh Breinolf. He'd just been to Purbright to the Army Drill Course. So he wanted to, we always did our drill training and all that. And I can remember one night, we're in the naffy, having a drink. Can't remember what night it was. It was after President Kennedy had been shot. And President Lyndon B. Johnson was then president. And he was visiting Berlin as part of a presidential tour. And there was a few of us in the naffy. And the next thing we knew, we were a guard of honour. And this was about, what time would it be? 9 o'clock? Between 9 and 10, we were hauled out of the naffy. Told to get our kit was always good anyway, so we didn't have anything to do. It was all battle dress uniform, and the next thing we did, under the lamps, and we were practicing drill. And the next thing we knew, we were on a bus off to Tegel Airport. Tegel? Tempelhof. Tegel or Tempelhof? I think it was Tegel. That was the main one at that time, and we did a guard of honour at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and of course there was the French and the Americans as well. Why the DLI was chosen, I do not know, but apparently, and from what I gather, there was the brigade commander who was at a cocktail party, and he was asked to supply a guard of honour from the British, and he chose the DLI. So the next thing is, I say, we're in Tegel Airport, and we had nothing. We had no cups of tea, no coffee or anything. So anyway, the Americans, or the French, I think it was the French, and invites us for a cup of coffee. And I remember this was when the parade was finished. And I remember I was in the front rank, and he was talking to various people in the front rank. And of course, our drill was unique. They'd never seen it before. And the
and this was the straight from the
from at ease.
From at ease.
That we gave a present arms. Of course, we came came to attention. Rifle came up, and when we marched anywhere, it was at the trail. Of course, when we halted and everything else, the French and the Americans had never ever seen that before, and they were quite impressed. So we invited them down. Anyway, we started off, and we had to wait for them catching up, because we did the 140 paces to the minute. I don't think our band was there. Our band wasn't there. So of course we marched down. And
did you have the buglers with you?
We had a bugler with us, but as I said, we didn't have the, and this was in I think it must have been 61. I'm trying to think when President Kennedy was killed.
63, was it? I can't remember myself.
No, it was. I don't think it was.
Anyway,
then.
It's on record.
I know. Yeah. So anyway, then of course we had the Queen's birthday parade, and I had the honour of being in the escort of the colours. And that was another absolutely. It took place at the Olympic Stadium, and we had the Welsh Regiment, the Green Jackets, and we were the battalion chosen to present our colours, and that was a terrific, terrific parade. We had two parades for the Queen's birthday parade. One was for all military, the Canadian, the Americans and the French, and the main parade itself. And when we did the parade, the Americans and the French, of course, we did our normal light infantry drill, and we also did a double patch, a double pass to pick up the colours. And of course, it was absolutely superb. Band and bugles, and of course the double pass to pick up the colours. The Americans.
Is that the double pace where the trot?
Where we trot.
Yeah.
And we are unique in that we share the double pass music, the same as the Lifeguards and the Blues and Royals, which is the keel row. We did that, and I mean, that was absolutely superb. And all the Germans were in as guests, and there must have been, I don't know, I remember the Olympic Stadium being full when we did this parade. It was absolutely superb. And of course, when the Americans would, you know, you would talk to them afterwards about the parade, and they would say, "And were you?" Yes, I was on that parade. I was the one who came, and they used to praise, you know, said it was absolutely unique. They loved it.
So, at what point in time did you start protecting the prisoners in the prison?
Oh, it Spandau. Spandau prison.
Yes, yeah. Were you involved in that?
I was chosen to be in the parade, but my greatcoat wasn't. I didn't have the new greatcoat. I had an old type greatcoat, which meant I didn't actually go up to the prison. Although I did all the drills and everything, I didn't actually go to Spandau prison to do the actual guard. I must admit, I was pleased I wasn't. I'd done enough. But yes, the battalion did take part in, because we used to do a month at a time. So the Americans, the Russians, and then the Brits. And each battalion was given the task of going and guarding the fridge. I don't know who we took over from, whether it was the French, the Americans or the Russians. I can't remember, but I remember them because it was a handover takeover. It was band and bugles, and they actually did a proper ceremony taking over from whoever it was. And I know some of the lads they were telling me said it was because once you went in there, you did the parade, and you went in and did the guard. It was very, very strict, because the guards themselves inside the prison, because there was no contact between the British troops and any of the German prisoners. I believe at that time there was 3 or 5 prisoners who were actually incarcerated at Spandau. One was Hess, one was von Scheer, and there must have only been 3. And the only contact they had, the actual guards themselves were Polish. They weren't, and I believe there were some British guards as well, who were from the British Prison Service, I believe. I'm not 100% certain, but certainly the main guards were Polish. And I know Hess was in there, and von Scheerer was still in there.
So these would be perimeter guards that you were doing in effect.
The troops themselves were perimeter. They were on the top and did the main guard. And then any time they could be inspected by whichever country, either the Russians, the French, and the Americans, and of course the British. But the Russians, apparently, they always used to come in. It was another way of getting into West Berlin.
Did you? Were there any problems at any time that raised them itself amongst the Germans that you got involved in? I'm thinking, political or...
No, not that I remember, no.
Riots or this kind of thing?
Although we did riot drill, we were never called out to... I mean, you've got to remember, there was 1,500 British troops, a brigade. They're about the same French. There was about 1,500 French. 5,000 Americans. They had the biggest contingent. And around about 25,000 German police. But they weren't just police. They were paramilitary police. And we used to have exercises against the French, the Americans, and the German police. And the main part was taken in the Grunewald in Germany itself, in Berlin itself. We used to have our exercises with the French, and with the Americans, and with the Germans.
And were these major exercises, really big ones?
Oh yeah, they were quite big exercises involving all units. The Grunewald is a big, big place. And we used to go down in our off-duty there. But yeah, we and not only in the summer, but in the winter as well. Because I remember we got our vehicle stuck. But the vehicles that we had... our radio vehicles, they were absolutely brilliant. They were very light. I mean, we've turned the one over and got out of the vehicle and just put it back on the side. You couldn't do that with a Land Rover. But again, that was a German, I can't remember, DKW, I think they used to be called. They were quite light.
And how long would these exercises last?
Maximum 14 days. So you're out in the field for about 14, and again I wasn't, I think on one exercise I was attached to a company doing company back to battalion headquarters, but mainly my duties there, as I say, I was the RSO's driver, not driver, because I didn't drive at that time. when I was the RSO's signaller. And later on, I was also the dispatch rider as well, because we had, again, what a difference to the different vehicles we had. I remember, because I passed my driving test and everything else, and did the exercises, I was given this motorbike. And I remember it had 11 kilometres on the clock. It was absolutely spanking brand new BMW. Front and back, telescopic scopes. I could actually raise the seat as well to give it extra coming doing cross country. We had three allocated to us in the signals, and then each company had one as well. And I trained the signal platoon on the bikes, and it was these bikes were absolutely beautiful. One of the officers we had was a bloke called Mike Sumner, Captain Mike Sumner, and he used to take us out, and we used to do cross country on them. And we used to go on, and I mean, we used to come off these bikes, and honestly, they were absolutely spanking brand new bikes. And I used to think, these shouldn't be used for cross country, you know, they were absolutely beautiful bikes. And then at that time, I also did brigade dispatch rider as well. My task was twice a day, I would go around the various units and pick up the mail from official mail, and then take it down to brigade headquarters and up take to the Royal Signals there. They had a dispatch box, and I used to take them in there. And I thought, oh, it was all right for a while, but the problem was with that. I mean, I would never ever get lunch, because I would be out from about 11 till 2, and then I used to do an afternoon run as well. But I'd still have to be doing my normal duties as well. So I never used to get my hour's break.
What did the dispatch rider wear?
We had our boots were actually calf length boots, just below the knees, gauntlets, riding breeches, which they used to use for horses, and also our battle dress top. Hat was the paratroop hat. It wasn't the proper crash helmet, it was a paratroop hat. And normal gloves. And we had a big trench coat down in inclement weather, which went down to our ankles. And talking about that, the battalion did an exercise down at Senilaga, and I actually rode that bike all the way down from Berlin down to Senilaga.
How far was that, did you say?
I would say it's over 200 miles. And what I used to do, the vehicles that we went down, and you used to get to the checkpoint. We weren't allowed to speak to East German police or Vorpos, only to the Russians. And I remember on one of the trips down, I was at the back of the convoy, and he tried to pull down a barrier in between me and the last truck. I remember accelerating the truck, ducking my head and getting underneath, and he just gave me a wave and laughed at me. He knew exactly what he was doing.